Great. Well, thank you very much for having me. It's really lovely to be with you, and thank you too for supporting us. You know, since I think it's 2013, really, St. John's Lindo was the reason that we ended up going back to Cambodia for our second term. So you were an answer to prayer. Yeah. So I can tell some of you the story later. But yeah, so thank you so much for supporting us. And yeah, for inviting me to share. So the theme of the next hour is linked to this heading, Gospel Living Across Cultures. And in preparation for this talk, I did a little bit of research on St. John's. And that basically means I had a good nosy on the internet at your In Touch magazine, which I really enjoyed, actually. I think it was great. So I looked at multiple copies of that. And I particularly enjoyed reading the interview pages of different members and also the New Faces pages, which I just thought was such a lovely idea. And so I decided I would count the new faces in the last 2 years of the magazine. And it was astonishing. So I counted 84 new faces in the this two-year period, and 70 of those were Asian ethnicity. And I think probably most it seemed from the blurbs from Hong Kong. So I thought, wow, as a church, you will have been learning, you will have been on this journey of gospel living across cultures as you've had all these new faces come into St. John's. And I wondered, for those of you who have joined St. John's in the last couple of years, and those of you who've been here, what have been some of the joys of that, of new people coming? What have been some of the challenges? What are the things that might have changed for those of you that have been here? But you're definitely doing intercultural stuff, because this is what I did earlier. I think it's pretty good. I'm very proud of it, and Holly was an excellent teacher, and it was just really lovely to do something. And that is what intercultural church is about. It's about people using their gifts and sharing those gifts, and those gifts being received. So that was definitely a gift that I enjoyed receiving. We're going to look at what it means to, as a church family, live this gospel life across cultures. And here is a brief plan of our time together. I think that's going to come up. So we're going to look at what it means to be an intercultural church. So firstly, what does the term intercultural mean? And then what is our context? So I'm going to share a little bit about my context and the context of my church, Holy Trinity Platt. And then you'll have an opportunity to share together something about your own personal context and the context here at St. John's. And we'll then have a quick activity, which will hopefully help us explore our perceptions of life here at St. John's. And then perhaps in your own time later, you'll be able to think about how your context has impacted those perceptions of St. John's. And then finally, we'll consider some ways in which we can continue to grow and develop in our journey of becoming a more intercultural church. So, what does the term intercultural mean? I'm going to show you three diagrams on the next slide, and there are three labels. There you go, so three diagrams. And those coloured blocks, if you imagine, that's kind of different people groups, as it were. Okay, each coloured block of three is a different people group. So I want you just to discuss with whoever's next to you which of these diagrams refers to cross-cultural, because they're not in order, which refers to intercultural, and which refers to multicultural. And try and think why you've come to that decision. And then we'll see if you're right. So just 2 minutes, discuss together which is cross-cultural, which is intercultural, and which is multicultural. Okay, go. Okay, so the top diagram illustrates a multicultural situation. So there are different groups within the church, but they are very separate. And occasionally, there might be an individual that connects, but it doesn't impact the whole church, and nobody is changed in that multicultural setting. So a non-church example would be perhaps being in a city where you might go to the Chinese supermarket and you might buy some Chinese delicious food, but you never interact with the Chinese people within that supermarket and the people who are selling the food. Okay, the middle diagram, that illustrates a cross-cultural situation. And again, this is quite individual focused. So an example would be Paul and myself. We crossed cultures to go to Cambodia, and we were changed in that crossing of cultures. And actually, people that we interacted with in Cambodia would have been changed as well, hopefully positively. But that is an individual, and there's not much change, but there is a bit of change. And then the final diagram, this is an intercultural approach. So there's lots of different interactions. They're all over the place, and everybody ends up being changed by those interactions. Okay. So, an intercultural church is one where everyone is changed, everyone has an opportunity to use their gifts and have their gifts received. That's important as well, how your gifts are received by others. Everyone is a learner. An intercultural church is where everyone is a learner. So we spent 9 years in Cambodia, and one of the big blessings was studying the Bible with Cambodians, with Cambodian Christians, or with Christians from different places in the world in our team. There were 23 nationalities on our team. And it was brilliant because everybody's context, everybody's background impacted the way that they read the Bible. And we got to experience that. So it's a real blessing. So everybody is a learner. An intercultural church is one where difference is valued. And it's also a church where boundaries are crossed. So people often hear the term intercultural and they think it's just about ethnicity. But actually, it's about any boundary that needs to be crossed. So that could be age, it could be disability, it could be gender, it could be mental illness, it could be class or education. So any boundary that you need to cross to make a relationship with, that's what we're talking about. Crossing boundaries, that's an intercultural church. And the next slide shows a helpful illustration, I think. So this is another thing. Intercultural church avoids assimilation and it celebrates differences. So if you look at the fruit salad, this is what an intercultural church is like. So each part is distinct, and it comes together to make a delicious whole. And when another fruit is added, it changes the whole flavour. The whole thing is changed by what is added. But the different parts do remain distinct, as opposed to the fruit shake, where everybody is, all those fruits are there, but you can't see any difference. They're all blended together. And they're kind of assimilated into the church culture. And the church culture is what dominates. And so everybody fits into that culture. And the church culture doesn't actually change. I just find that helpful. Okay, so I just want to spend a few minutes sharing why I think an intercultural church perspective is important. So firstly, I think it's always been part of God's plan. So God is always bringing people into his kingdom, and we see that right through the whole narrative of the Bible. So from the Old Testament stories like Rahab, it took time, but she did become part of the people of God. Or like Ruth, who married Boaz, and then is in the genealogy of Jesus. So there, she was a foreigner, and yet she was brought into the family of God. Or in the New Testament, you've got the Ethiopian eunuch with Simon, and he discovers the scriptures and then is baptized and comes part of the family of God. So God is always bringing people into his kingdom, and that different people. Secondly, Jesus himself crossed cultures. He modeled it for us. He left his throne in heaven. He became a baby. He lived as a man. He was killed on the cross and he rose again. But he himself modeled this crossing cultures. Thirdly, we pray for it. So we should have it. We pray for it in the Lord's Prayer. When we say, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven," well, our best picture of heaven, I think, is in Revelation 7, which says, "I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, and they cried out, 'Salvation belongs to our God, who sits on the throne, and to the Lamb.'" So this is what we are praying for. A pragmatic reason for intercultural church is that it blesses us. So when I started this role as intercultural worker, there were two Bible verses that really struck me. And the first one was this: "It's more blessed to give than receive. It's more blessed to give than receive." And I looked at our church and I thought, we are withholding blessing because we are not enabling people to give. And that is not loving. And that leads on to the second verse, which from John 13:35, "By this shall all people know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." So intercultural church and that everybody being able to give blesses us, it blesses all of us, but it's also missional. It's also the way that people see the people of God and want to know more about him. When we love one another, it's attractive to the world. So there's some of the reasons I think intercultural church is important. So we've looked at intercultural church a little bit, and now we're going to have a little look at context. And here's something about my own context. So I'm married to Paul, who, although he's white British, he was born in Thailand and he went to school in Malaysia. And we have two daughters who grew up in Cambodia. And certainly when we first came back to Manchester, they felt more Asian than British. I was telling somebody in the coffee time that it was lovely coming back to Manchester because Manchester is such a diverse place. And so the girls went into schools that were really ethnically diverse. And the first week of school with Sally, she made friends with a Chinese girl and an Indian girl. And as we walked home from school, she said, "Mum, it's brilliant. We're all Asian." So that was So that's a little bit of the context. We've been members at Holy Trinity Platt for over 20 years, and they sent us out as missionaries to Cambodia, and we worked there for 9 years, from 2008 to 2017. And that has been very kind of impactful in terms of, I think, when we came back to Manchester, the context we've been in kind of really impacted the way we saw church here. So when we returned to Platt after 10 years away, it felt like things had changed. There was a lot more diversity in the pews. We were sat next to Malaysians, Indonesians, Indians, Nigerians, lots of people, and that was so lovely for us as we come from such a diverse place. And a bit about Platt's context. So Manchester is one of the most culturally diverse cities in the world. There are over 153 languages spoken in the schools in Manchester. And it's one of 6 cities in the UK and 60 worldwide that actually has the label intercultural city. We're also in a very studenty area with 3 universities. And I think I did read that now Manchester has the largest, or one of the largest, populations of international students in Europe. We're a very poor parish. We also have a very high Muslim population. So over 40% of our parish, and we're a very small parish actually. And we're also a large church, so we have 400 to 500 on a Sunday and then more watching online. So that's just some of the context of Platt and where I'm working and myself. So now I want you to spend some time, just in 3s or 4s probably, just sharing a bit about your own context, where you've come from, the things that have impacted you, and St. John's context as well, which will probably be different depending on how long you've been here. So just share something of your own context and the context here at St. John's. So you've got about 5 to 10 minutes. We'll see how time goes. Yeah, so we're not gonna have time for feedback now, but I hope you found that interesting, and I hope you perhaps learned something new about somebody that you were sitting next to. So the next activity is this, when I want to think about how our context might impact the perceptions that we have, the things that we think about church. So you've each hopefully got a worksheet, with lines that you'll see on the screen, like the example on the screen. Perhaps the next one, Gareth. Yeah. Okay, so you've got these various choices on the worksheet. And I want you to think about where St. John's sits. Now, this is your gut reaction. This is not something to spend time on. You'll only have 1 minute to do, or even 30 seconds, just to quickly put an arrow. So I think there's an arrow on the continuum. Yeah. So you might think that St. John's is hierarchical, or you might think it's not hierarchical at all. So you can choose where you put your arrow on the continuum. Just see if everyone's got their sheets. Yeah. If you need a pen, just put your hand up. Pens. Okay, now what's important to say, if everyone can just, before you start doing it, what's important is, this is not a, one is better than the other. So don't think about it and think, oh, one side is better than the other. There's no judgment in that sense. It's just your perception of each of these areas. So you have 30 seconds to put your arrows in. Don't talk about it, just do your own one. So there should be no talking. You should all be doing your own perceptions. Done? Okay, has everybody filled it in? Have you put your arrows on? Yeah, great. So now I want you to find somebody that you don't know very well. Perhaps you've hardly ever talked to, you don't know very well. And I want you to compare what you have written. And then just choose two or three of them to kind of say why you've put your arrow where. So not all of them, just some. So you can stand up if you need to find somebody. Again, 2 minutes. Find someone you don't know very well, compare your answers. Okay, so you can be at the same church, but because of where you have come from and your other experiences, you can actually see things very differently. And that's why it's great just to talk to each other about some of these things, because I think, Richard, you were saying earlier, weren't you, about culture and that the fish doesn't know it's in water. And quite often, if you've been in a place for a long time, you don't even see the culture and you have assumptions about it. So it's really good when people come, like, not to be afraid of having those conversations and just finding out things. Okay, so great. So now I'm just going to share with you a bit more about my role as an intercultural worker. And so I started this role in probably like late 2019. And I suppose one of the reasons, I don't know if I'll say this. Yeah, I suppose one of the reasons it came about was because, as I said, the church had changed a lot, in our opinion. We've been away for 10 years, and it was really diverse, and we loved that. But actually, the longer that we were there, we realised, oh, it's only really diverse in the pews. It's not in any level of leadership. And actually, groups were quite separate, a bit like that multicultural approach. So you could take a photograph of church and you would see a group of Africans, you would see a group of Asians, you would see a group of Westerners, and everybody was quite separate. And so I ended up having a conversation with our vicar and just, you know, shared, oh, actually, this is quite interesting. And to me, it was a real shame because I'd learned so much in Cambodia from the Thai evangelist, and my Japanese leaders and my Malaysian friends and my Cambodian house help. Like, it was so lovely to have that richness. I thought, what a shame, we've got this richness in the diversity of our congregation and we're just not using it. So he basically said to me, well, write a job description. So I was like, oh, great. So I went away and wrote a job description, and thankfully OMF were happy to second me to work as an intercultural worker. And I found out that, yeah, my time has basically been divided into these three areas of building relationships, sharing learning, and examining systems. And building relationships is absolutely key to an intercultural church. You cannot have an intercultural church if you don't know one another. And it's only when we get to know one another that we trust one another. And that's really important for leadership as well, because I found at Platt that sometimes it was just sheer busyness that they hadn't managed to organise somebody for Sunday morning. And so they went to the people that they knew, the people that they trusted. And quite often as human beings, we kind of relate to people who we think are like us. And so that was actually the leadership kind of knew people who were like them. And so that's who we saw at the front of church. So it's a real challenge to actually go and cross those boundaries to people who are not like you, or you perceive are not like you. You actually find out there's more in common than you think, but it's that initial perception. And so we have to fight against that tendency. And I think a lot of it is also to do with fear, particularly like language barrier. You kind of feel fearful about having an interaction and how will it go. But we know that perfect love drives out fear. And these are things we just need to practice and put into practice. So at Platt, we found it really helpful to have shared meals together. And it used to be that we would have church family picnics where everybody would bring their own lunchbox. And we do that still, but we realised that actually that isn't how everybody in the church family would do lunch. And one of the ways that you can break down barriers is have bring and share, where you say, bring something you would eat at home, bring something you would enjoy. Or if it's kind of a festival time, bring something special that you would have. And then all that food is there placed on a big trestle table. And it's a really easy way then to have conversations, because you can say, ooh, I like your food. And that, you know, encourages people, and then they can say about it. And then you've broken down some of that fear about, if I invite this person or if I'm invited to their house, what will it be like? So that's just something that we've really enjoyed. So I think, yeah, having a weekend like this is also a great opportunity to just get to know people. And it is about creating lots of different opportunities, because people are different and, you know, different things will suit different people. Building relationships is absolutely key. And then another area is sharing learning. And I think, again, that verse, perfect love drives out fear, is really important, because I think that when you don't know something, like I said, you have a fear of it and you mistrust it. And I found that was happening, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, with theology. So, for example, a lot of our kind of church leaders, they would be reading books by only really Western theologians. And that is the people that they went to kind of illustrate their sermons or to help them with sermon prep. So that was one thing that I realized. So I started reading books by majority world authors, so theological books. And not just majority world authors, sometimes it might be about racism, or it might be about reaching Muslims, but anything to do with culture. But yeah, mostly majority world authors. And I would write a one-page summary from those books and then give them out to the staff team. And that has been really helpful, just in terms of breaking down some of those boundaries of, this is how we do theology. I mean, it's not, is it? We talk about liberation theology. We talk about Asian theology. We don't talk about British theology. We say that is theology, but it's not really. It's just our context of theology. And it's great, too, to hear about Christianity in other places. So it's a great opportunity here to hear about what faith is like in Hong Kong, what church is like. We have an Indonesian fellowship. They're not Platt's Indonesian fellowship, it's kind of a Northwest. And we've had brilliant time hearing from them about Easter time in Indonesia and just some of the things that they do as part of their Christian faith that we would never do here. And in fact, we might be a little bit fearful of, because it sounds a bit odd. They kind of do grave dressing and things. But it was really interesting and helpful to hear. So always like think about sharing learning. I think as well, podcasts are really good. I've been listening recently to a podcast called The Harvey Project, and it's by a South Korean American lady, and she's talking about that existence of living between cultures. And it's just really interesting to hear her perspective, because I think that is a big thing when you have people that come to this country who are first generation, but the children are growing up in a very different culture to their parents. And there's a lot of tensions in that, there's a lot of joys, but it's really good as a church to kind of grapple with that and recognize that this is something and be able to talk about those things. So sharing learning. And then finally, I do think it's important to examine systems that are in place in our churches. So for example, how can people join the leadership structures? So PCC was an example at Platt. I was elected onto the PCC, I think after a couple of years, and I was quite shocked that there's about 25 to 30 people on Platt's PCC. And apart from the rector, who is British but Sri Lankan heritage, everybody else was white British. And I just thought, this is really interesting, because our congregation does not look like that at all. But what we realised was that a lot of internationals in our congregation did not know about the Church of England. So they did not know about the electoral roll, for example. And because they didn't know about it, perhaps they were a bit fearful about what it meant, so they didn't join the electoral roll. And then when it came to May, when you elect people, you have to be on the electoral roll for 6 months. So they couldn't be elected anyway. So that was a very simple thing to change in terms of putting the diary in November, explain what the electoral roll is, go to people individually and ask them, would they like to be on, would they like to hear more? Because that's another thing. Some cultures, they won't put themselves forward. That would be seen as kind of arrogant or rude. They would wait to be asked. So do that in November, and then when it comes to May, you've got more people that you can then invite onto the PCC. So that was very simple. I mean, it's not simple once people are on the PCC. You can get people on, but are you going to listen to them? And are you going to be willing to change some of the structures so that you can hear people's voices? So an example is I've got a Japanese friend, and she gets very, very frustrated in her small group. Because in Japan, for her and her experience, you always wait for a pause. I mean, it feels awkward, doesn't it, to have a pause? In our meetings at Platt, I don't like it, there are never pauses. People always jump in before somebody's finished. So she was like waiting for this pause, and it never happened. So she never contributed. So it is important to be able to ask people, well, how do you do meetings and, you know, in your country or your culture, so that you can make sure that people's voices are heard. And I think, I mean, we had a difficult story for me anyway with our ministry trainee scheme. So I'd been in the role for about 4 months, 5 months, and I felt I was doing a great job. And then suddenly 7 ministry trainees were appointed, and they were all white British. And I was like, I'm in this role, how has that happened? So I went to the ministry trainees, and I kind of asked them, they kind of mapped out how it was that they became ministry trainees. And again, basically, they were friends with the student workers. They felt they had power in that they felt they could ask them, can I be a ministry trainee? Yeah, sure. So we kind of thought, you actually have to, yeah, again, it's that not everybody will feel that they can put themselves forward. So you can lose a whole group of people by assuming they don't want to be part of things. So I think Sunday services are important, and I think bodies are important. I think, again, it's a tension, because you don't want to be tokenistic, and you don't want, for example, just to put lots of different diversity on your church website, but actually it just be for show and it not actually be what is happening. But at the same time, bodies are important, the different bodies that are at the front. And then that's important for children to be able to see a body that is like theirs doing some leadership in church and be like, that is something I can do. So I do think bodies are important. Language. I mean, I am sorry, I'm an intercultural worker, and I should have translated the worksheet, because I think that would have been, you know, easier and helpful. But language is tough, and it's a tough thing at Platt that we're grappling with at the moment. We've got so many new people coming into our church family, which is wonderful, but actually, how does discipleship happen? That is something I am quite worried about in terms of, people in our congregation. How can you disciple people well, particularly when there are different language barriers? So there are definitely struggles and tensions and things to think through. We're not going to have time, I don't think, for this last bit, but it is something that you could do at another point, either over the meal or at some other point. But just have a think about these different areas, building relationships, sharing learning, examining systems. Perhaps just think about one of them and think about, what is already happening. There is definitely wonderful intercultural stuff happening at St. John's, which I've enjoyed today. But also, what else can be done? How can you move from that multicultural model and approach where it's quite separate to actually becoming more intercultural, so that everybody is a learner, everybody is changed, and I think, that's an exciting place to be, so I'd encourage that. So, I think that's the end.